Welcome to the Ideation Podcast. This is an on-the-go podcast designed to help you move your ideas forward through better implementation. In each episode, we'll hear from thought leaders in multiple industries, share about how they implement their ideas in order to make them remarkable. That is worth making a remark about. I'm your host, Charles Lee. Well, it's great to be back with the Ideation Podcast. Our team is super excited to share with you all the great interviews we've been able to record over the last few months with some phenomenal idea makers from all around the world. Let's start with today's episode. You're thoroughly going to enjoy. Most of you already know Seth Godin. He is the author of 17 books that have been bestsellers all around the world and have been translated into more than 35 languages. Seth also writes quite often about everything from the post-industrial revolution, the way ideas spread, marketing, quitting, leadership, and most of all, changing everything. You might be familiar with some of his books, including Lynchpin, Tribes, The Dip, and Purple Cow. Most recently, about 3 years ago, Seth was inducted into the Direct Marketing Hall of Fame, one of three chosen for this annual honor. A few months back, I had the opportunity to sit down with Seth. Seth has been a tremendous support and a distant mentor in the way that we've shaped our company, Ideation. And periodically, he's been able to kind of speak into the way that we form as a company. And so I sat down with him to ask him a few questions. And he covers a kind of a myriad of various topics during this interview, including things like creating a mission for one's life as an entrepreneur, as an idea maker. He has an interesting take on how habits can actually be a trap to execution. And so you're going to want to hear that portion of the interview. Also, he gives some very practical applications for cultivating an idea mindset. He inspires, I think, he inspired me during this interview on how to stay true to your mission in the midst of so many different opportunities, and how do you pursue things in life that truly do matter when it's all said and done. In addition to that, he'll have some insights in the way that he sees kind of the future of innovation, some social innovation as well as provide some encouragement for those of you listening who are hustling to make your ideas come to life. I hope you enjoy this episode with Seth. If you enjoy the interview, I hope you can also help us continue to increase our ratings on places like iTunes, or if you're listening to this through a link in a blog, we'd love your comments and feedback as well. Well, let's get to the interview. Hope you enjoyed this episode of the Ideation Podcast with Seth Godin. Well, Seth, thanks so much for your time today and joining us for our podcast.
A pleasure, Charles. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's. I have like a whole series of questions to ask you, and we'll see how many we can get through.
All right.
Today. The first thing is, I love to hear, I mean, from you about maybe some key moments or pivots in your life that has really helped to shape kind of your mission. And from afar, I've been definitely a benefactor of a lot of your thoughts. And I'd love to hear from you some of these key pivotal moments in your life where you really got to a place where you really wanted to help people ship, if you will.
Thank you for starting there. I won the parent lottery without question. I grew up in Buffalo, New York with two extraordinary parents. My dad was in corporate America but ran the United Way as a volunteer. My mom was the first woman on the board of the art museum.
Wow.
And so I grew up in a home which was open to an enormous cross-section of people, Russian immigrants, the people who lived down the street, but also Henny Youngman, the famous comedian, when he was in town. And it occurred to me growing up that my parents didn't really care what their kids did as long as it was something worthwhile, something that mattered. And over time, I've come to the conclusion that this ability to matter is open to just about everyone. And for me, mattering means changing something. That if you are doing a job that could be done by 100 other people, a cog in the system, that may be a fine way to make a living, but it's not your contribution. Your contribution involves teaching or connecting or leading or speaking up or seeing something that others didn't see. And those are choices. So deep down, I knew that those were the choices that I wanted to make somewhere, somehow. I started as an entrepreneur when I was 14, And it felt to me like creating value by bringing things to people who wanted to buy them was sort of fun. But I was never interested in doing it to make a profit. I really was just trying to make change happen. And then I would say the biggest shift is when I was 17 and 18, when I started teaching an obscure sport called style canoeing up in Canada.
Really?
Which almost no one has ever seen before. It's one person in an 18-foot-long Canadian wooden canoe doing tricks on flat water.
Oh, wow.
And I taught 10-year-olds how to do it, 12-year-olds how to do it. What I discovered is that when you look a 10-year-old in the eye and tell them the truth and treat them with respect and give them responsibility, they often rise to the occasion. I also discovered that if you put somebody who had been told their whole life that they couldn't do something in a vehicle by themselves, right? It wasn't a Toyota, but it was a vehicle all by themselves, many of them would be transformed by that experience. So I decided then that I was going to be a teacher. I didn't have the patience to be a teacher in the traditional bureaucracy sense of the word. But could I turn on lights for people? Could I open doors for people? Could I teach industries? Could I teach people? Could I find a pulpit where I could share what I saw? So ever since then, that's sort of been the arc. I was then a serial failure as an entrepreneur for many years until I finally figured out how to make a living doing what I wanted to do. And ever since then, I've tried to make my practice be one of finding something that needs to be said, that hasn't been said, turning on lights for people, connecting them, and hoping that they will get the spark that I got and go on and pass that forward.
Right. I know that many have asked you through numerous interviews and podcasts about habits and how you do what you do. And I know you have a little bit of a different perspective on that type of questioning. So I'd love for you to kind of frame, when you hear those types of questions, what are some thoughts that run through your mind?
Well, let me start with this. I know and have worked with a lot of people who on the surface or even deep down are quite successful. Mm-hmm. People who have made a big difference or people who have made $1 billion. People who have written bestsellers or people who are TV stars or people who have raised families of intelligent, curious children. Here's what they have in common. They don't have anything in common. Some of them stay up really late.
Yeah.
Some of them get up really early. Some of them drink a lot. Some of them don't drink at all. Some of them play hopscotch. Some don't even know what hopscotch is. So that leads to the second feeling, which is the people who often want to know the answer to that are looking for a shortcut, as if wearing the sneakers that Michael J. Fox wore in a certain movie will make you a better actor. The sneakers don't make you a better actor.
Right.
The habits don't make you a better contributor. The seeking the habits is a way of hiding. What you're hiding from is responsibility. The responsibility to be in a situation where you are afraid. That what it means to make change is that you are doing something that might not work. And that's a real loaded sentence. Because we've been trained from a very young age to not do things that don't work.
Right.
But if you want to make change, that's the only way you can sign up for that. That when you're busy making a polio vaccine that's going to change the world, you don't know if this particular one is going to work. And maybe you're going to give it to someone who gets sick. That's the risk of making change happen. That when Sarah Kay started doing her spoken word poetry at the age of 14, any 14-year-old could have done what she did, and none of them did. It's not because they didn't know how to speak. Of course they know how to speak. It's because Sarah cared enough to do something that might not work, and when it didn't work, to do something else again. So that's the only habit. The habit is signing up for a practice where you are willing, in a respectful way, to, with dignity to other people, expose them to ideas that might not work. And any actor or entrepreneur or contributor who's telling you the truth will tell you that that's the secret.
That's a great insight. You know, some people listening might say, well, what are like some things, maybe not a formula, but maybe some examples of ways you continue to do that well? I know in the past I've heard you talk about you know, your love for cooking, or little activities that continue to remind you of pursuing and executing and so forth. What are some maybe even like personal things you enjoy for yourself? And it may not mean for any other person, but for you, what are some examples like that?
Well, let me go sideways for just a minute. You know, for the last year, I've been running the Alt MBA, mm-hmm. which is an online sprint, a virtual workshop that lasts 4 weeks, and several hundred people have taken it.
Yeah.
What do we teach? The first thing we teach people is how to see. Now, there are all sorts of things you can do in your spare time that will teach you how to see. Mm-hmm. By that, I mean, do you notice things that other people don't notice? Do you notice when you enter a building what the front door is made out of? Because it actually subconsciously was noticed by you, whether it was this big oak heavy thing, whether it was a high-tech sliding thing, or whether it was sort of a rackety warehouse door. Do you notice that when you went, oh, I wonder why that's there? The second thing we teach is how to make decisions. And that's what most of us make for a living now, isn't it?
Right.
We don't make widgets, we make decisions. Most people are really bad at that. Again, in a hobby, something like cooking, mm-hmm. you can either be the person who follows recipe exactly or the person who makes decisions.
Right.
You learn how to do that by practicing. And then the third big topic is, can you persuade other people of your ideas? And this gets back to teaching. And one of my biggest hobbies is teaching people something that I care about. Only with practice do you discover how to tell stories that resonate with people, how to give examples, how to take people through. The difference between a great golf pro and a mediocre golf pro is not, are they good at golf? Like, I could give you a golf lesson right now, but I can't hit even 120 because I know how to teach. I don't have to know how to play.
Right.
And you learn how to teach by learning how to see, by learning how to tell stories. So this all weaves together. So one of my hobbies is listening to music. But what I've discovered is that I enjoy my stereo more if I'm reading about the music I'm listening to. That knowing that there's a story behind it, knowing who was in the session with Charlie mm-hmm. Parker, knowing the relationship between Herbie Hancock and Joni Mitchell, understanding that background, for me, turns on lights that I wouldn't have on if I was merely listening to it. Now, that's not true for everyone, and that's another key learning, is that different people are different, and we have to have the humility to accept that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's wonderful. You know, one of the things I've really respected about you, Seth, is your ability to have some clear boundaries on what you will or will not do. And I think it's difficult when you're kind of starting off, because at one hand, you want volume to try to even figure out what you want or will, you know, don't want to do. But talk to us a little bit about... I think inherently people know it's important, but that practice of it is, you know, how did you help shape that and continue to shape that in the years that you've been doing this?
The thing is, it's easier when you're starting, not harder.
Mm.
Because when you're successful, if you're trying to top yourself,
right.
you're going to have to do something you didn't do before. Right? When you're successful and you believe the external press releases, you're going to have to do something that gets you a new press release. When you're starting out, when you got nowhere to go but up, it's way easier to have principles. Now, I'm certainly not complaining, because I've tried very hard not to read the press releases and stuff.
Right.
But this consistent choice making is part of what we do. We make decisions. Now, I can talk about it from a tactical point of view. For example, if you decide you want to be a Hollywood screenwriter, it's not a good idea to also take creative work that's going to distract from the work you need to do your work. Yes, you need to make a living, so you should be a gardener. Right? You need to make a living, you should be a babysitter. But you shouldn't be someone who writes dime novels, because then you're going to get hooked on doing dime novels as your creative endeavor, and you're not going to be a screenwriter ever again. That I was asked early on when I was a book packager to produce a Broadway show. And you can't do both. Either you're in one camp or you're in the other camp. That if I abandoned one and did the other, I'd be starting again, fresh eyes, very exciting. But then I'd still be back to where I was, which is, how do I get the next Broadway show to produce? How do I do the next one, the next one? So you pick early
right.
to be a meaningful specific instead of a wandering generality. But more important to me are the principles. You know, if you need to lie to start succeeding, when are you going to be successful enough to stop lying?
Right.
If you need to rip people off, if you need to not keep your promises, when are you going to start? It seems to me we do our best if we know other people are watching us and we act as if our mom knew what we were doing. And if we can just apply that principle from the first day to the last, it's so much easier to be consistent in what you stand for.
That's really good. Speaking on that, I'm sure many have influenced you through the years. Are there a couple of people maybe that come to your top of your mind where they really help to shape an area of your life, whether it has to do with things like, you know, determining everything from boundaries or just kind of professionally or personally? Who comes to mind the quickest when you think about those who have influenced you?
You know, there's the people we're lucky enough to know, and then there are the people we're fortunate enough to have discovered.
Right.
And the discovery part is easier today than ever before, that you can find heroes and ask yourself what they would do. And then sometimes you're lucky enough to meet them, but sometimes you're not. It turns out it's okay either way. So when I think about people like Susan Piver, who is someone who teaches mindfulness, who has become a dear friend of mine, her teacher, Pema Chodron, who I've never met, I wrote the foreword for her last book, Lewis Hyde, who is a professor, I think in Iowa, who wrote a book called The Gift. Mm-hmm. These are people who are thinking deeply about how we got here and what works for us. There are people who I'm lucky enough to work with. There are people who I've taught. What I've discovered is when you can look someone in the eye and discover things behind the things behind the things. My friend Kat runs Defy Ventures, which is a nonprofit that helps former prisoners.
Right.
Kat's just extraordinary, and it raises the bar for me. People like John Wood, who started Room to Read. Room to Read has raised $250 million to build schools around the world in just 15 years, 10 years.
Wow.
Right? Well, if he can do it, you can do it, right? If he can care that much, you can care that much. We have to figure out how to take a deep breath and realize getting that quarterly report into that office by this moment isn't the most important thing in our life. It might be our job, but it's not the most important thing in our life. It's, would they miss you if you were gone? Did you make a contribution that made things better? And, you know, walking here this morning, I passed so many people who were in that rush hour haze. You could just see the dissatisfaction on their face as they drove their $80,000 car to their $200,000 a year job. Really? I mean, they could be living in a hut in some place where there is no healthcare. They're not. They could have been living 400 years ago when healthcare didn't even exist. They could be living under a regime that was treating them horribly. But instead, they've decided to have this mindset. I think that's a choice, and we don't have to make it if we don't want to.
Really well said. You know, a lot has changed. A lot has stayed the same in our world. We're still human beings. When you look out at some of the things that are developing, whether life in general, science, technology, which areas excite you the most? When you look at that and say, man, some people are really solving significant problems that are out there and actually innovating for the good of humanity.
Well, first, an update from the present before we talk about the future.
Yeah.
This is the safest time in the history of mankind. It is safer today to be a human on a per capita basis than ever before. Less violent crime, less danger of being killed by your fellow man or some enemy than ever before. Healthcare is better, people live longer. Only 9% of the people in the world are underfed right now. We forget that all the time.
Right.
But it's worth remembering. In terms of where we are going in the near future, in the future where you and I are still going to be around for, I would say, I'll start with the bad news, which is the Earth is melting, mm-hmm. that the crisis in the atmosphere is a significant one, and it cannot be denied. At the same time, artificial intelligence, here's the definition of artificial intelligence. It's everything a computer can't do yet. So the stuff that computers can do now was called artificial intelligence 20 years ago, but now that they can do it, we say, no. That doesn't count. Chess doesn't count. Go doesn't count. But once you can add a voice to it and a chat room to it, and it knows everything the internet knows, it's going to be a spectacular game changer in all of these areas that we cannot possibly conceive of, and it's going to happen pretty soon. I'm on the record as saying virtual reality, I think, is overblown. It gives me a headache, but maybe younger people will get their arms around it. And then we have this whole issue of what happens when computers interact with health and computers interact with the gene. And I think that there's going to be some stunning things happening there shortly, maybe some bad outcomes. There's a great book called The Wind-Up Girl, that I a science fiction book that really blew me away. I just finished that. And I guess then the last thing that I would throw out there is self-driving cars are around the corner. Mm-hmm. And they will cut traffic jams in half. They will cut fatalities in half. And there's no going back.
Mm-hmm. I'll ask you one last question. And that is, there are plenty of people that obviously make excuses as to why they can't execute. But there are also those who are hustling, and you work with them all the time. And they're working really hard to try to do what they believe matters. What would you say to that second group, given the things that you know? Are there any like words of challenge or encouragement, some things that we all ought to be mindful of and kind of moving forward towards things that matter?
40 years ago, when I was growing up, there were 3 business magazines. There was 10 business books published a week that maybe you needed to know about. Now, anyone with a laptop can reach 1 billion people at the stroke of a keyboard. That's daunting.
Yeah.
We say to ourselves, I'll never be able to make the change I seek to make because it's just too big. I would say to those people, start with 10. Change 10 people. Matter to 10 people. Influence 10 people. Folks come to me and they say, I can't get anyone to read my book. I can't get anyone to read my blog. And I say, well, have you shared it with 10 people who trust you? Because if you do and they share it, it's good. And if they don't, you need to do something better. But the fact is that we live in a world based on connection now. And your job isn't to connect to everybody. Your job is to connect to people with something that they will connect to other people with. Everyone is capable of doing that if they choose.
Good word. Well, Seth, thank you so much for doing what you do.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for this. I know podcasting is a thankless job, and you have to go at it for a long time before it makes an impact. So thank you for persisting.
Thanks for being with us.